For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
Facebook.com/ForComicsSake.
For Comics Sake on Instagram.
Or email us ForComicsSake@yahoo.com.
For Comics Sake presents
Baby Got Bat
Issues. This podcast is rated M for mature content, not approved by the Comics Code Authority. Here we go, issue number 5 of Baby Got Back Issues. For November 2016, this is Anthony and
Ryan.
And this is Anthony's pick, which is me, Silver Surfer New Dawn. And this is Silver Surfer from 2014, issues 1 through 5. From writer Dan Slott, art by Mike Allred, a.k.a. they're known as the Storytellers in this series for Silver Surfer. And then colors by Mike Allred's wife, Laura Allred. Letters by Clayton Culls. So yeah, that is the credits for what we're going to be talking about. But before we dive into that, if you've never heard of the Silver Surfer before, never read him or anything like that, here's a couple little known facts. Silver Surfer, created by Jack Kirby. He first appeared in the Fantastic Four issue number 48 in March of 1968. And the Silver Surfer is the character of Norrin Rad, who is an astronomer who had always wanted to get out from his home planet of Zenla, and he wanted to see the stars and all that kind of fun stuff, but he never did, until the World Eater Galactus showed up, and he was going to swallow the whole planet whole, suck all the energy from Zenla to keep himself going, and all, you know, billions of people were going to die. And for Norrin Rad to basically... he sacrificed himself. He gave himself to Galactus and said, if you spare Zenla, I will become your personal herald and find you planets you can consume. And the whole mission, and well, Galactus agreed to that, and because he's like, well, no, I don't have to go and do it, basically. You know, that's like someone saying, like, I will drive you everywhere. Like, you're going to be like, all right, I'll take that.
Yeah.
What had happened is that Norrin Rad was given part of the power cosmic, and he had silvered up, if you will. He'd become now the Silver Surfer, and he was going to put his old life behind him. He had a wife, wife, Shala Bell, he was putting all that behind him now that he sacrificed himself for an entire planet, and now it allowed him to go out and see the stars and the spaceways and all that stuff. But the one little thing is that Norrin Rad, now the Silver Surfer, was going to try to find Galactus some uninhabited planets so that he could secretly save people. So even though he's working for the bad guy, he still found a way to, he wanted to, just find planets that he can get the energy from, but there was going to be no beings out there, so it was going to be fine. But Galactus was too smart on that and basically was able to, like, alter something within Silver Surfer to basically be bad and find him full inhabited planets and stuff. So that is the overall idea of the Silver Surfer. He had come across planet Earth, and he had met the Fantastic Four. And once he found the Fantastic Four on Earth and he saw the life that was on Earth, that's when he started to feel his old self, Norrin Rad, and started to feel his old life and family and friends and just the cultures and just being part of a society like that. And that's when he decided to work against Galactus, and he tried getting Galactus to stay away from Earth, even though it was now like a very meaty planet that would have been great for Galactus. And with the help of the Fantastic Four and Alicia Masters, who is most famously known, she's a sculptor. She's known as like Ben Grimm's girlfriend in the comics, and has once dated Silver Surfer too. But with the help of his new friends, he was able to save planet Earth, get Galactus to go back into space. But the one extra little detail is that Galactus put this protective bubble jail, basically, this barrier around Earth that wasn't going to let Silver Surfer go back into space. He was stranded on Earth for like close to a decade, or if not more, and he was forced to now be exiled to Earth. All of that happened, Silver Surfer, all that happened because Jack Kirby was tired of drawing spaceships. So in the original comic, when they did the Marvel method, where Stan Lee and Jack Kirby, they would do like a general outline and Jack would draw everything and then give it back to Stan, and Stan would fill in dialogue. So there wouldn't be dialogue written in most of the Marvel works that Stan and Jack did, which is the majority of all the main Marvel characters. So Stan would go in later, write in the actual dialogue based on the art. And when Stan went in and saw this Silver surfing character, he had asked Jack who that character was. He goes, "Oh, I was tired of drawing yet another spaceship when I was supposed to do the Galactus stuff." He's like, "This was much easier. I created this guy named the Silver Surfer," basically. And while Stan wasn't on board from the beginning, just being like, "Well, I didn't write him into the comic at all," he had went with it, and you know, look at him now. He's celebrating 50 years. This year is the 50th anniversary of the Silver Surfer, and all because Jack Kirby did not want to draw another spaceship, and he created one of the greatest comic book characters of all time, long-lasting character. So that is your, in a nutshell, that is the Silver Surfer. He had many solo series. This is volume 7, if I'm not mistaken, of a solo series. But some of those series, some had some long runs. Other ones maybe went for like 4 or 7 issues, 8 issues, whatever, 12 issues. Had some short runs in there. Never had something that was constantly ongoing. So it was much ado. It's been maybe a half a decade, if not more, that he had not had his own solo series.
Yeah.
And now that was happening with one of my favorite writers, Dan Slott, writing Spider-Man for all these years. Now I was going to bring the Silver Surfer, a character that I always adored. He never was my favorite character. I always loved Spider-Man the most. But a character where I was just like, "Oh, that's pretty cool." And I liked All Red's art and stuff with like iZombie and books like that. Mm-hmm. He's done some Batman 66.
He did some a Fantastic Four.
Okay.
He did like a Fantastic Four run that looked almost exactly like this.
Awesome.
Yeah.
And he's got, I can't think of it right now, but his own creator-owned book that, I own some of the issues of. I was always going to go back on it. My mind is a plorp.
We can just look that up.
Yeah, we'll get there. Madman?
Oh, I don't know.
Something like that.
Literally, I have no idea, okay. So I'm going to look it up.
But anyways, you'll get that answer there. But yeah, so when I was pretty excited, what we do in Babe Got Back issues before we dive into the actual issue, we talk about our initial reactions. Mine, after giving the backstory there, is that I always liked the Surfer. I never was a top favorite, like I said, with Spider-Man was, but I always liked him. Owned some toys and some merchandise and stuff like that. I loved him in the movie of Fantastic Four, Rise of the Silver Surfer, portrayed by Doug Jones, and then voiced by Lauren Fishburne. And I had met Doug Jones, and it was cool to have met Silver Surfer himself. He is one of the cooler aspects of that film. So that's my initial reaction. I did buy the first issue when it came out, just because I'm like, "Oh, I'll buy it, Stan Slott." I'm like, I enjoyed it, but for budgetary reasons, I'm like, I can't commit to another comic.
Sure.
And we'll get to that later, how I eventually came back to it. But your initial reaction on the character of Silver Surfer and the series?
The character, it's definitely a character that I didn't really know much about. I can tell you that when you look at some classic comic book collectors, where it maybe TV shows, I actually remember something from Secret Stash.
From Comic Book Men?
Yes, Comic Book Men. It seems like this is a character that some of those classic collectors love.
Yeah.
Like, it's the history behind the character is something that you always hear about. I remember that episode where someone was trying to sell him something, and he basically said it was his holy grail. And he said, "Price is no limit." Like, it didn't matter, and everyone's jaw dropped.
And then he eventually said, "Can you go down $100?
Yeah, I know, yeah.
But yeah.
So, in that aspect, Enjoyed it a lot because, like I said, I didn't know much about the character. And from what I remember this character from the little I've read of him, the way he spoke was very, like, mechanic and very...
Very proper.
Simple and proper.
Yeah.
In this book, it looks like Dan Slott has given him a little bit more of an actual personality.
Yeah. In all of the runs, and I haven't read every single comic, but I would love to own every single and read read it with a collection or original issue, whatever. But in all of the previous volumes, six volumes of the series before this one, this is a very different tone, which a lot of people embraced and loved, and it's been going on for a couple years now. But at the same time, then there's some people who maybe don't like that style because it is a very different take. But when you have 50 years of a character, this is a fun take on it.
You know, we're gonna get into it here. I think the other thing that makes this book work is that his partner in crime is basically the exact opposite of him.
Yes.
And there's plenty of relationships in TV shows and TV and comics that we've seen where that works. I mean, like kind of Amy and Sheldon in the Big Bang Theory.
Sure.
They're complete opposites.
And Sheldon very much a Norm Red.
Yeah, well, there you go. But when you see them on TV together, it just works.
Yeah.
They just know how to do it.
Yeah.
And I'm sure you can think of numerous matchups like that. So yeah, his partner in crime,
like me and Jessica Alba, things like that.
Exactly, just like that. So in terms of that, Dan Slott just makes the relationship between the two of them work. It just works. So no, it's a fantastic series. So it was a good pick.
Awesome.
I can't wait to start talking about it.
All right, let's talk about it here.
Yeah, sounds good to me.
Issue 1 of New Dawn from 2014. We start this brand new volume 7 of The Silver Surfer, with Earth 12 years ago. We're in Anchor Bay, Massachusetts. We see the twin sisters Dawn and Eve Greenwood, who make a wish upon a falling star. And when you look at it, you know, when you see that, it's just like, yeah, it's definitely...
It's a star.
Like, even when reading this, I didn't even think, being like, well, that's not... Nope. That is a star. Maybe the star of the book.
Yeah.
Because, yeah, we definitely get to that. But Dawn wishes for the star to not fall so that everybody can get a wish. And her
sister didn't like that.
Yeah, her twin sister Eve is very much someone who is a very big traveler.
She's a fucking brat.
Yeah. Hey.
Just say it.
I'm good. We're just going here. she is, she's very adventurous, Eve is, and she thinks that... that her sister Dawn is just kind of wasting that wish by, because first Dawn actually kind of wished for the same exact things, and then she's like, well, you can't wish for the same things I wish for, you have to make up your own wish. And that's when she just like, well, I wish that star would never fall so that everyone can get what they want and get all their wishes and all that kind of stuff. And then Eve just thought that was stupid and left. And but their dad, Mr. Greenwood, Reg Greenwood, I think we get his name later on, but okay. Mr. Greenwood.
I'll be on the eye out for it.
Yeah, he just kind of reinsures that is a very, very great wish that a young girl would make, that she's thinking of everybody and, you know, not using the wish for her own personal gain. And as we zoom in and they're going to take a look at that star a little closer, as the reader, we take it very close and we realize that star is the star of this comic series, Norn Red, a.k.a. The Silver Surfer. So, yeah, that was pretty sweet. And what we had found out is that at that time that was happening, that is when the Silver Surfer was looking to get the Earth to give it up to Galactus. So in the time frame of when she was a little girl, that's when Norn Red, which, you know, for us as the reader, that was like 50 years ago.
Yeah.
But in comic time, that was 12 years ago. So that is what is happening there. And as we go on, we're now in the now. And we see that Silver Surfer is saving a sun for a planet of billions. And basically, he's going around and he wants to make up for all of the past sins that he's had for working for Galactus and all the evil stuff that he's done. And even, like, the people in this world, like, are scared of him. And, but because he's known as the Herald of Galactus, but when he finds out that he's there to save them, they quickly make statues of him, and they just kind of honor him in that way there. But like I said, everyone everyone is pretty much fearful of him because he's known as a herald, or even if he's known as a former herald, the people
they look at him
worried.
As a god. Yeah, they look at him as a very powerful god.
Yeah, so when he shows up, they don't necessarily know what he's there for.
So, like, all these creatures that he saved on this planet, they have all of, they've got these word balloons and they're all talking. I read it as, "We have offended. Do not snuff out our son. Forgive us, Surfer. We beg you." That's how I read all of those.
Yeah, and he's very, it's very much a very good interpretation of that. So,
because they're so tiny compared to him.
And yeah, and he's just kind of just reassuring them that he's just,
chill out.
I'm here in peace and just, you know, got your son back. but then we run into these little, what we later find out are called CAM bots. C-A-M bots, and basically approaches Silver Surfer and refers to him as champion, because what these CAM bots want to do is that they want to, Surfer has been chosen to save the Empyrean, which is a world hidden in space from the likes of Galactus. So he's kind of confused, and he immediately kind of gets transported, or you see an image of him, rather, from this guy named Zed, and you see this cloak guy that off to the background that you won't see till much later there. But they're kind of looking, being like, all right, this is our champion here. We have to choose him, and he's going to be the one that is going to save us all. And Surfer is always the one to help save people, but at the same time, he's very confused and just like where the CAMBOT came out of. And he's never heard of Empyrean, and he's been around everywhere in the space ways. And so he's kind of just at a loss on what exactly this is. But that's not going to stop him from being a good guy and helping out. We cut back to Earth, and we have Eve telling Dawn about her travels. So we see a bunch of stuff that looks like we're just like actually there, but we kind of zoom out a little bit, and we see that Dawn is just hanging up these photos, these postcards that are being sent from her twin sister Eve, and just of all of her journeys, and just kind of talking about, like, don't you want to get out from, you know, you just stay there at the inn. Her dad owns the inn, the Greenwood Inn, and it's kind of interesting that Dawn is very much a hometown gal, while her sister Eve wants to do, you know, they're exact opposites in a way when it comes to twins, other than looking exactly alike. They have very different goals for their own individual life.
I just found something really creative that the artist slash colorist did. If you look at what they're wearing, if you look at what Eve's wearing in when they're children, she's got like a black and yellow dress on. Okay. If you look in the pictures of her, she's got like a black and yellow scarf. She has a black and yellow skirt.
Sticking with those colors.
She's got like a yellow jacket. Yeah, that's actually really good. And look at it. And then if you look, she's
Hank Pym yellow jacket.
Yes, exactly that. And then you have her, Dawn, wearing polka dots.
Yeah,
as
she's
an
got
adult.
Her. She's got her ladybug.
Yeah, that's kind of it's kind of neat how they did that to differentiate themselves, considering they're twins. It looks like.
Yeah, and it helps us. Yeah, it helps us, the reader, too.
I just noticed that now.
So yeah, it's cool, and she's very much, Dawn is very much happy being here, helping out her dad, and they're down there, and they're welcoming a bunch of, people to the inn that are gonna stay, and it's a big tourist attraction. You're in Anchor Bay, and you're in New England, and honestly, like, I'm more on Dawn's side of being like, this is how I relate to her, where, like, I'm not a big travel guy, I don't care about any of that kind of stuff, but, like, and Dan Slott has shown pictures of this that I think when he visits, like, goes by his parents or something.
Sure.
I think this place exists that he,
oh, okay,
that they based it on and stuff. And, like, I'm not a travel guy, but if I were to ever travel, I want to go to Anchor Bay, Massachusetts, because I want to take a Silver Surfer Greenwood tour and just take my action figure and do
right
pictures
now.
And stuff.
Oh,
so,
by the way, that artist, that was Mad Men.
Mad Men.
Mad Man.
Mad Man, yep.
Yeah. Sorry, good. I just was going to, just before I forgot, yeah.
Good. So yeah, great works by Mike Allred there. And so yeah, that's what we're seeing, a bunch of guests coming in. But we cut back to the space, and we are seeing the Surfer gets attacked, and all these people are assuming that he's a Herald of Galactus still, so that's what they're saying, like, let's get him, you know, whatever. And he's basically dodging all that because he's a Silver Surfer and he can do whatever. Mm-hmm. But yeah, he's getting attacked, and that's when the Zed character comes up, the guy that had seen that image of him being like, yep, that's going to be our champion. We meet Zed, who introduces the Surfer to the Empyrean as the greatest destination in the galaxy. That's how he refers to it. And we get this giant splash page.
Yeah. So colorful.
Yeah. If you've ever played, I'm trying to, damn it. What's the...
What?
It's a PlayStation game, or okay. It's a crazy, like, Japanese game where you run in and you it's calamari. It's something along...
Okay.
It's something along that thing where...
I don't think I know that. Okay.
It's something along that dialogue, but you're an crazy alien thing and you just pick up all these objects and you just keep building objects onto you.
Sounds like a Japanese game.
Yeah, I own it on an iPad and I think for PlayStation and stuff, but anyways, it's Katamari. I think that's what it is.
Okay.
Calamari is like a fish or something or like
yes.
A
octopus.
Octopus, yeah. Or it's a trap. From Star Wars.
People are going to be like, what the fuck is he talking about?
Anyways, so it kind of looks like something from Katamari, where it's just this big, giant ball of a planet that's very oddly shaped, but it just has, there's an amazing color. That's where Laura Allred comes in and just kills it. Like, every color is used. Yeah, Surfer is just a little blip of that, and oh god, so awesome. We meet the Empyrean world, which once again is the greatest destination in the galaxy. We cut to Dawn, who's giving a tour to all the guests going through, and there's a funny thing here where she mentions famous people, and let me see, I think it's in this panel here. Yep, she talks about the famous people that have been at the end to kind of get everyone pretty excited about their stay there. They said they've had everyone from Princess Grace to Howard Stark. That was cool to get Tony's dad mentioned in there. To Nat King Cole, and as well as 16 other famous celebrities and Norville Rappaport. Someone goes, who's Norville Rappaport? And Dawn goes, oh, you wouldn't know him. He's not famous. This way, please. And I, when doing the reread, I Googled it just being like, all right, what kind of reference is this?
Yeah.
And when you Google it, you get someone asking Dancelot on Twitter who Norville Rappaport is, and he simply goes, oh, you wouldn't know him. He's not famous.
Wow.
And
that's nice.
And I didn't go into deep research, and maybe this is just going to be a hidden joke that he's holding for himself or someone that's in his life or something, like a little shout out to a grade school friend or something. Yeah. But from my understanding is I think that is just a made-up name that is not anywhere, and it literally is true that he's not famous, he wouldn't know him. And one person has a theory, well, maybe a bunch of people have a theory, that Norville Rappaport is following the same lines of Norrin Rad, and it has it has some kind of symbolism with the name, like someone's like trying to come up with these conspiracy theories or something. But I love Dancelot's reply and his dedication to the joke.
Yeah,
I laughed so hard because that was years ago that happened, and the fact that picture of that tweet came up.
I just Googled that name or whatever, and it took me to a really old website that did a review of the series. And they have the picture of the, what is it, Empyrean? Empyrean.
Oh, the Empyrean, yep.
And then there's like a little blog here, and the first thing, the first sentence is, oh, my mother, Mary fucking God.
Reacting to the
camera. Yeah. The husband-wife artist team of Mike and Laura Allred is so fucking amazing.
Yeah.
I've always had a huge man crush on Allred because he was so cool enough to do the art and make a cameo in Kevin Smith's Chasing Amy.
What? That's right, yeah. Because he did, I think he did the art for the opening of Chasing Amy, if I'm not mistaken.
Really?
And then Allred made a cameo.
I'm just
going
to keep
there.
Googling shit as you're talking. Yeah. That's interesting. I just had to read that. I gotta figure out, how do I work that into a everyday sentence? Oh, my mother, Mary fucking God. I've never said that before.
Well, now you have a goal. So.
Yeah, exactly.
I'm a
simple man.
Just like Norrin Rad.
Yes.
As Dawn is giving a tour to the guest of the Greenwood Inn, we're getting Zed now giving Norrin Rad a tour of the Empyrean at the same time. And the Surfer finds it impossible that trillions of travelers have been keeping it a secret because Norrin Rad has been anywhere and everywhere.
He knows shit.
Yeah. And what was cool is that he's so shocked. There was Thanos on the screen, so that's why I had pointed.
Oh.
But he was so... It was cool seeing Surfer just being like, how... This doesn't exist. how does this exist?
Yeah.
So yeah, that's kind of cool there. Zed says that the fear of heralds is what unites all of the races on the Empyrean.
Okay.
So one of the heralds being the Silver Surfer himself. So yeah, that is that. Zed is going to be run through what they call the motivator, which is to find out the truth on who he is, was, and who he's going to be. And as that happens, we see this awesome, panel here of basically the life of him as Norrin Rad. We see Shalabel in there. We see Galactus. We see Alicia Masters, who's in his left bicep over there.
I don't think I know who that is.
That is the Thing's girlfriend. She's a blind sculptor. She was in the movies. Yeah, we see basically all that stuff, and Zed basically just kind of gives him a scan, the motivator, as they call it. Then we cut to a crazy scene where Dawn's just kind of sitting there, just kind of reacting to after the tour and just kind of going through the itinerary of like all the stuff that they're going to do. They're talking about a clam bake and stuff like that, and whale watch, nature hikes, candle making, all this stuff. And big day tomorrow, she says, and then something crazy happens where she just basically teleports into what's that show that Whoopi Goldberg was in the middle of the... Hollywood Squares?
Yeah. Damn it.
She's in a Hollywood Squares of a prison up in space now, surrounded by all of these alien-looking creatures.
You had a Whoopi Goldberg reference. That's impressive.
Hey, she was in Star Trek. It fits into the science fiction story here. She gets sucked into this little box, and it's like a prison with all these other aliens, and then we cut back to the Silver Surfer. We're getting a lot in this first issue here. Just really setting the pace here. Surfer qualifies for the job, and the job is that they want Surfer to stop this oncoming threat, the Never Queen, the Queen of Nevers, who is coming in and wants to, take down... the Empyrean. The Queen of Nevers is an original character created by Mike and Dan for this series.
Okay.
Has no previous Marvel continuity. That's one of your bonus facts.
She's badass.
Yeah, some bonus facts that you'll get for the...
I think it's in the second issue, but they say that she looks like she's even bigger than Galactus.
Yeah, they do make that reference in size there, because Galactus is huge and can just take a planet in the palm of his hand like it's a golf ball or something. We introduce to the threat that is the Never Queen. She's after the energy source that keeps the Empyrean going. And Zed makes a very interesting... message to Surfer here by saying, oh yeah, the other champions haven't been able to do it, but we think you can. And Surfer's like, whoa, other champions? He's like, what happened to the other guys? They're like, yeah, there's many others that came before you that we selected that could not face the Never Queen. And yeah, they're gone, they're dead, and he's kind of flipping out, and he reveals that there is they have one thing that's going to make the champion stay there. Something to use as like collateral damage and leverage.
Leverage, yeah. Kind of like, I don't want to use the word hostage.
Yeah, but
in a way, I mean.
Yeah, they're basically, what they do, what Zed has been doing, is that they capture somebody that is very close and near and dear to these possible champions' hearts. They hold them in these little cubicle things, and they're being like, well, if you don't, you have to do it, and if you do it, then we'll set your lover free, or your father, your mother,
And that's who he's guessing. That's who the Silver Surfer is guessing.
So, yeah, Surfer is kind of flipping out, and he goes through a list here, a laundry list, if you will, of who it's going to be. Shalabel. I almost said, like, Shallow Hell. Shalabel, who is his former wife on Zenla, he questions his mother. He goes Alicia Masters, who was a former girlfriend. Also Nova, which is Frankie Ray is her name.
Okay.
I have an action figure on my Silver Surfer shelf downstairs. She was the female Nova and had a romance with Silver Surfer back in the day. And then he also questions Mantis, which we're going to see Mantis for the first time portrayed in the Marvel Cinematic Universe by Pom Klementieff in Guardians of the Galaxy Volume 2. So I like the idea that, Mantis also was a former girlfriend, former Avenger, and also with Silver Surfer there. So he's going through the list just being like, oh my god, who is it going to be? All these characters that are going to be back in his life. And we cut to an image from these Cambots that show Don Greenwood. And we end this comic in a very hilarious way, if you want to say Silver Surfer's words, his reaction to Don Greenwood.
Okay, I have absolutely no idea who that is.
And we cut to the title of this issue, which is The Most Important Person in the Universe. Dan Slott and Michael Allred, the storytellers for this comic. And isn't that great that, yeah, they captured her and Silver Surfer just has no clue why. Just being like, oh, okay.
Yep. There's Thanos.
But they're like, oh, okay, I guess. All right. And that sets up for an amazing first issue.
Yeah.
And I do remember reading that just being like, all right, that was crazy fun. But once again, I'm like, oh, I only have so much money.
Sure.
I'm not going to dedicate it to another series, you know. And I was glad. And I will tell you by the end of this podcast how I got turned around. And it wasn't in these first five issues at all. But yeah, so anyways, that is issue one and of the Silver Surfer.
Yes.
Issue 2 of the Silver Surfer New Dawn. Once again, 12 years ago, we see Dawn and Eve that are in a play of Snow White, and you can kind of just see how they're different from each other, and you see that Dawn is playing the magic mirror, and she's supposed to mimic everything that Eve is doing. She's playing the, you know, the witch or whatever her name is. I don't remember Snow White. But yeah, you could see some argument going on because Dawn is just like, well, I'm a magic mirror. I can do all this and do whatever I want. And it's you see her having fun, but it's pissing off her sister Eve. And that is something that's going to make sense later. But we are cutting back to now. We're on the Empiricon. And this is great because Silver Surfer is kind of swearing that he doesn't know who Dawn is, but he will protect her.
Yeah.
Because, and the trillions of others that the Empiricon is, the citizens of Empiricon, from the Never Queen. So it's kind of interesting. You see her trapped in this bubble and she can't quite hear what's going on the outside. She can kind of see what's going on, but she's just kind of trapped there and, he's just seeing like, well, I don't know what this is, but okay, I guess she's my mission now. Yeah. And that's just what he does. And so, yeah, that is what's happening now. And this is when Silver Surfer decides to just get right to the thick of it and to meet the Never Queen. And this is when we see her giant. She's huge. And at this point, it looks like she's about Galactus size. But as you had mentioned in the... that we will eventually hear that, you know, at times she's bigger than Galactus. So yeah, we have now met the Never Queen, the Queen of Nevers. And she knows every way that Silver Surfer will die. That's one of her threats. And it's just like, good God, I don't want my enemy saying that.
She knows like every possible outcome.
Yeah. And that's something that is a little scary, I think.
I would not want that power.
Oh, no. Yeah, it's a... It's a power I don't trust with anybody. So, yeah, we cut to that prison cube where we see all of the people. Dawn is in there, and they all have these like little rooms. Like it seems better than prison. You know, they got like a little window and a curtain and stuff like that. And it's mealtime, and you see this guy going around and like handing out meals. And but you know, one guy rejects it and doesn't want. He's considers himself a free man, and he's not just going to eat because they bring him food and be a slave to them. And Dawn is talking about how she's a vegan.
Yeah. There's actually some funny dialogue because she brings them like burgers and stuff and she's disgusted.
It's burgers, shakes and fries because that's what American people on earth.
He calls it like a shaked milk.
Shaked milk.
Or something. Yeah. Shaked milk.
That makes me want to order a shaked milk somewhere and just be like, I'll take a burger, fries and a shake to milk, please.
But what he brings back for her is even funnier.
Yeah. Are you talking about the Zapper apples?
Yeah. And the one guy there really is like hungry for them.
Yeah. This guy named who I think we're just going to call Plorp.
Okay.
Because he keeps saying Plorp, and I think he's maybe referred to as Plorp.
Nom, nom, nom. He's just throwing him in his mouth.
But yeah, so anyways, when she calls for like the Zapper apple things, he gets very excited because he loves Zapper apples, but it gives him hyper acid reflux.
Yes.
And so that's why he doesn't get to eat them.
Plorp.
Yeah, so we get that little fact there.
Yeah.
We cut to the surfer who is destroying... Did I jump too far there? Yeah, he's eating the Zapper apples because of that. Don gets that idea where he's like, well, how bad is that acid? And basically, as he does that, it starts like deteriorating the walls.
Yeah, he throws up and then it kind of melts everything.
So now they're finding out that they can kind of all start to get free from everyone. We cut to the surfer who is destroying these little Cambots because he just wants to talk to the Never Queen. Basically, just get right, instead of just going into an all-out battle with someone he just met, he decides, he's like, well, let's get away these cameras. Let's actually talk this out and see, you know, how we can resolve this without someone dying, especially when he just found out that she knows every way he's going to die. So, let's just talk, please. They want to talk openly. She continues to fight for every future, she says, and this is starting to flood the surfer's brain.
Yeah.
And this is when you start seeing all of these characters of his past, and you see the Defenders in there, see the Hulk, and see...
I love floating heads. When I see floating heads like that, it reminds me of, like, 70s comic books.
Yeah,
with the floating heads in the corner of the... Yeah. I love seeing that. I didn't even think of that.
Yeah, it's a good little thing there. You see Fire Lord in there, see Galactus, and you just see all of these possible things. You even see a clip of Surfer handing a silver-haired baby over to Dawn.
Yep.
And you see them getting kind of romantic, but these are all these different possible futures for Norn that she is showing him.
Yep.
So that was...
It's tearing him apart, he says.
Yeah, and when I saw that it's tearing me apart, I added a Lisa after that. It's tearing me apart, Lisa. The Room.
Oh.
That's a famous quote of him.
All right.
It's tearing me apart. So that, hey, that might even be just a little nod to that. That is crazy that he is seeing... my notes just keep jumping on the phone here, so I keep jumping back up to issue one.
What's up with that?
Yeah, what's up with that? Okay, Keenan.
No, what's up with the phones?
Let me cut back to where we are here.
We were just... He had all of his... visions that were popping into his head.
Okay, so that is happening. He is reacting to it. And then we cut to Zed and this, like, cloaked master guy who, like, we don't really get too much information on him until much later, but he's just acting as this mysterious cloaked dude. But he hands him something very important. This giant sword / spear / staff, and they refer to it as the Edge and the Edge of Reality. And it's this staff that Zed is very much excited to be wielding, and we find out that he had once wielded it in a very important way, which we will get to later on in the story. But what he wants to do is basically use it to destroy the Never Queen, just being like, she's here, she wants to destroy Empyricon. I have to help save Empyricon, even though the Surfer's out there. He destroyed the cameras, and he's out. Who knows what the Surfer's doing out there? So Zed almost just kind of takes it into his own hands, and he's like, all right, I just have to do this. And this staff, apparently what they say its abilities is that it can cut open the fabric of reality.
All these powerful weapons.
Yeah. We cut back to the prisoners in the motivator cells, as they call them, and we start to see them freeing. They're all running away. They're all trying to figure out, like, you know, how to get out there.
You know, even though, you know, we were just introduced to this new character, Dawn.
Yep.
And, you know, I like how she's already being shown as a hero.
Yes.
Because she doesn't, first of all, she's... All of a sudden in space, she's way too relaxed. I would be a fucking nutcase.
Yeah, she seems to take this pretty easily.
You see that she is rescuing all of these different aliens that she just met.
Yeah.
It's like, and she's like leading them. I just think that's kind of cool how, you know, she's really important. Surfer doesn't know her, but then you can look what she's doing.
Yeah, she's so, not a damsel in distress.
No, not at all.
The classic what you would imagine. So. And that's a very important theme for what we're about to come up to here. We see the prisoners. They want to go to the reactor core, they say. So they start making a path to go there. The Surfer still lives because of Dawn's wish 12 years ago. So this gets into a very interesting interesting thing. So he kind of figures out like why he still gets to live, and we see in her eyes we see a young Dawn, and we see that star, and then we kind of just see some ties where Surfer starts to figure out how she plays into this whole thing.
In the meantime, right before that, this group, they come into this big pink heart.
Yeah, yeah.
Which is obviously important because...
Yeah,
because
they're at the reactor core and they're all just kind of like looking at it. And Dawn is just kind of amazed at the whole thing. So we cut to that and the Never Queen is dying. And she releases very important information because Zed cut out her heart with that Edge staff. And he was going to use the power of her heart to power this planet, to become a leader, and use it for, you know, just fame and money and just be a big popular, you know, just person in space. And we start to get a little twist on the story, being like, all right, she's not the evil one at all. And the Zed, who is, he is trying to save these billions of people, but it's all at his own wrongdoings, basically. So this is when the Surfer decides that he's going to pledge to save the Never Queen, and he comes across the floating corpse of this guy Battlejack.
I don't know why I laughed at that part. It probably wasn't meant to be funny, but it's basically this corpse just casually floats by him, and he just kind of grabs him and yoinks his helmet and his armor off and just puts it on.
It's the body of Battlejack of Jackstar 9.
Yeah.
That's just an awesome name there. And so that's when we see him take the disguise because he needs to, wants to sneak in and basically stab Zed and go into the Empyrean and stuff. And he tells his board to go find Dawn and keep her safe, basically.
I didn't realize how many powers his board had.
Yeah.
Yeah, I had no idea until I read this. Yeah.
Much like how New York City is another character in any type of movie or story, the board is another character in the Silver Surfer universe. Wants the board to go find Dawn and keep her safe, ditches the board, and he kind of catapults himself and enters the Empyrean as we go back to that Katamari-type-looking Empyrean planet there. And he's able to get himself through this, like, little pipe zone thing to get himself to go in there. And this is when Zed's kind of, like, looking out, and he sees the surfboard is just out there alone.
He's dead.
Yeah, because it's just like, oh, you know. Yeah.
Another one died.
Yep, there we go. Mission accomplished.
Yeah.
And then we cut to the prisoners are starting to escape, and we see this running scene, and a very important scene in the whole universe of this last couple of years of Dawn, Greenwood, and Silver Surfer. We see Dawn and the board meet each other for the first time, and we see her reflection, and she greets her reflection, and her reflection is waving back at her without her waving to the reflection. And she just says it's a magic mirror. And they're like, holy crap, it's a magic mirror. And it's making some references to be like, oh, so that's why we wanted to see that little Snow White play in the beginning of this issue. Because, you know, you wanted to tie in some stuff here. And then we have a very funny ending here as Norrin Rad is silvered down now. And now that he's separated from the board, he's got the Battlejack of Jackstar 9 suit on. And he starts running through and
he looks goofy too.
Yeah, yeah. And
he's got a regular skin tone, but he still has the kind of the creepy eyes.
I'm going to show you a picture after this of someone who reminds me of him, and it's great. But anyways, he's getting trampled by all the prisoners running away. And as he wants to go help Dawn, he gets helped up by somebody. That somebody is Dawn herself. And at the same time, they basically say that I'm here to rescue you. And as Silver Surfer is trying to say that, Dawn interrupts and just says, nice to meet you, Norrin. Don't worry. I'm Dawn Greenwood, and I'm going to save you.
What?
And that's so great, because once again, just like what you said, that she's the hero of this comic, and here you have what we all think is the hero, thinking he's the hero, and he went there to save her, and she's just real simple, being like, oh, hello, sir.
Yep.
I'm going to save you.
That was Stan Lee-ish right there.
Yeah. Hello, sir, true believer, I'm going to save you. So, that ends issue 2. Issue 3 of Silver Surfer New Dawn, titled Change of Heart. We open up not long ago as we see the Never Queen and the and Eternity hooking up. Now, we had mentioned We had mentioned it's one of the most cosmic sexual relationships that I love. Neverqueen, who we learned is a brand new character for the series, but Eternity has been around for almost eternity. Eternity was created in 1965 by Stan Lee and Steve Ditko for some Doctor Strange comics, and was published in the Strange Tales series. Eternity has a total control over magic, matter, energy, reality, and time.
Jesus.
So with Neverqueen and Eternity being together, then anything in the universe is possible. And that's what we get in that first page of just them going in. And Eternity's always been represented that way, where it's just like, just you just see the whole universe inside Eternity's body and stuff. And there is some funny stuff here, like with them together, they say anything's possible. For instance, on Coltrane 9, a perfect song was played. in the nether, here nor there. That's the story of them. We also cut to Planet Prime, and an unclimbable summit was conquered. We cut to a science orb Sigma, a new element was discovered. We cut to the Silver Surfer, the endless skyways of space, the Silver Surfer Sordon. All of these things could happen because of the Neverqueen and Eternity getting together. And then we take one more thing that's possible as we get back to Anchor Bay, Massachusetts. Dawn back in the day, it says, and on planet Earth, Dawn Greenwood painted a lawn gnome. Huh. She did an okay job. The hat really should have been red. So it's funny that anything is possible, and even that is one of those anythings. So that's where you get some of that humor you wouldn't normally get in a Silver Surfer comic, thanks to Dan Slott here with introducing it this way. We cut to the story now about Zed and how he cut out the heart to build Impericon. That was alluded to in the last issue, and now we see the act of it happening and how that all went down, and he had that edge of reality staff and just cutting it right out and just using it for his own gain. And that's where we see that Zed was the villain the whole time. We cut to now where Dawn, she didn't want to complicate things by saving the Surfer first. Because as they're going through this here, he wants to go stop. He wants to go find the heart.
Yep.
And save it. And she's just like talking about like, well, we have all these other people to save here. And he's like, well, who cares? And this, you know, this is where he's just on a mission. And you know, even though he's out there to help everybody, even right here, he's just like, well, who cares about all them? You know, well, you know, we have to go do this. And she kind of stands her ground about, you know, being like, well, all these people are important and they're all like just like me and they're away from their homes and, you know, prisoners and stuff. So, that's where they're sitting right now. And, Surfer gets attacked by the dad of Battlejack from Jackton 9 or whatever the hell
it was. I like how he's just being stalked.
Jackstar.
You, what do you do with my son's sacred armor? Vengeance for the Battlejack of Jackstar 9. And he just tackles him.
Yeah, it's kind of funny because you see that.
It's like it's so WWE wrestling.
Yeah, there you go.
Yeah. It's just goofy.
And that's where Silver Surfer kind of unfortunately tells him about that his son had died, but he was fighting for his name and all that stuff. And, you know, he will definitely give him back the outfit and everything. And he apologized for, you know, possibly, like, you know, doing a distreatment to his son's legacy and his life and stuff by wearing his outfit. And that's what you kind of deal with that little interruption there. And this is where we have the board. The board is basically distracting all of these soldiers, these gatekeeper soldiers. And so while Silver Surfer's Norrin is doing this stuff, the board is working, you know, doing a distraction job here, doing enough as well, so just as much.
A distraction job? A DJ.
Pulling off a great DJ.
Yeah.
Everyone loves a good DJ.
Yeah.
So then they cut to the heart. They find the heart. They're here, the Never Queen's heart. And it's the power of every possibility is the best way to just sum it all up. And the Surfer plans to keep the Impericon powered by himself and when they return the heart, because when they do that, the Impericon, including billions of people, are going to die. But this is when the Surfer's like, well, I'm going to hold it off and I'm going to take care of that. You Dawn, stay here with the heart. You're going to be trusted with it. And this is the you had mentioned how it's weird that she's not freaking out.
Yeah.
This is the first time she freaks out.
When she sees Silver Surfer for...
Well, yeah, he silvers up, but the fact that he just, like, gives her so much responsibility of holding on to the heart here and just being like, you have to keep this safe. And,
and this she acts like it's so big.
Yeah, right? So this is the first time that she maybe is, like, in over her head. And this is where the comic gets crazy. The heart transforms into the monkey toy with the symbols that we see on the cover of this issue. And we later learn is because her limited human senses can't comprehend the heart, so her mind turned it into something familiar, something that would help preserve her sanity. And that is what, like, you know, we learned that much later on, but at this moment we just be like, what? And she's kind of like, what, I got this monkey now, what's going on here? We cut back and Zeddy, me and him, we go way back. I call him Zeddy. Me and the elementary school kids call him Zeddy. Zeddy is about to kill the Never Queen. He wants to end all possibilities of the universe, with the exception of the power he gets from her heart and stuff. So, you know, he's careless. He's only thinking about himself during this whole thing here. So, yeah, that is all the action going on there. And then we see the Empyrean is falling apart. And Zed has... We have a great moment here where the Surfer is trying to help everybody. And they don't want to leave. They see him, you know, they're like, well, this is our place, and we pay good money to stay in vacation here. And he's like, you know what? All right, I'm just going to get evil with them and pretend I am like a Herald of Galactus still. And threatens them, basically scares them off, so they all go running away. And, you know, essentially he's saving their lives, but they don't. They think he's the threat at this moment. But he takes that sacrifice to save their lives once again. He's always sacrificing himself for billions of people. Much like you and I.
I'm sorry, I'm rereading some of this dialogue as you're talking, and I'm just laughing at the stuff that Dawn says. She's just so down to earth, and she just doesn't...
It's weird that she's so down to earth when she's so far away from
Earth. Exactly.
She's so up from Earth right now.
Up from Earth, yeah. I'm just rereading some of this.
But yeah, that's where the bonus comes in, that when we do these Baby Got Back issues that we're, you know, going along, we're helping to tell the story and kind of both figure out what's going on here and just really find all the little hidden pieces. And, you know, it's not like we're reading it, and that's what's great to go back and just really enjoy it. And then, yeah, that's the one thing that you're missing out as a listener, is that if you have not read it yet, maybe you should stop and read it and come back and listen and question and share your favorite moments of this kind of stuff.
I'm sorry, I just, when I was talking about the opposites attract thing and how it works together, you know, there's some dialogue here. Silver Surfer says he's holding the planet together, and he says, there, that should do it. And Dawn is like, Norrin, call me Silver Surfer. All right, Surfer, why am I holding a toy monkey? And he goes, we'll explain later. Busy holding planet together.
Yeah, it's like...
So it's like they have this funny back and forth type situation going on.
Yeah, if you're like in the middle of like lifting something heavy and then all of a sudden someone comes up and like,
I can't talk right now, just hang on.
Hey, can you tell me who are those surviving members of Gilligan's Island that are still living?
I'm too busy breaking this coconut. I just radio not working.
So yeah, we start to see the Empyrean is falling apart. As I said, the group of the survivors, the motivators, all the people that were held captive as collateral damage, as leverage, we see them getting into escape pods and. They're starting to take off, but this is when they decide that, you know, we should help. They should be turning around, and they're like, everyone, all these champions, all their champions, their own personal champions, have been trying to save them. We should at least return the favor. So that's what's happening there. And then we jump into how the heart must return to the Never Queen before she dies. Heart, a.k.a. Toy Monkey, as we were talking about. And we get to a very important scene here as he needs a way to get to the Never Queen.
Yeah, okay.
And this is when he goes...
I thought you passed it for a second. I was like,
It's still there.
Okay,
it's
good.
It's right after your big... Yeah. He goes, and this is a famous Silver Surfer thing, to me, my board, to me, comma, my board.
Yep.
And the board shows up, and you know, as we would expect.
Yep.
We're going to get to some more of that later. But to me, my board becomes very, very important. We have the Power Cosmic speech, and he's kind of talking about all of his powers and his, you know, what he does and just, like, why he does this. And this is where he explains that toy monkey thing.
Yeah. I'm a little bit ahead of you right now, but I'm just remembering some of the other stuff that's in here. I'll let you, when you, are you past it already? I'm just looking where you are.
Well, the next thing is that as the surfer fights Zed, as Dawn is trying to return to Hard, because this is when he tells her, like, you have to go do this. I have to go fight him. You have to go do this. And she's just trusted.
And she's holding her breath. And
Yeah.
And he goes, what are you doing? Stop that. Breathe. And she's just like, duh. She like exhales really hard. She's like, how are you talking in space? And he's just like, I possess the power cosmic. How am I breathing space? The power cosmic. And I'm not freezing because power cosmic. That's very convenient. That's the power cosmic.
Yep, that is his great power cosmic speech.
Oh, God, right I love there. It. It's so good. The dialogue is just fantastic.
In the background, we're watching the Silver Surfer Fox animated series from the 90s and the Frankie Ray Nova. I have an action figure of her downstairs. She's talking with Galactus, so there's your former former girlfriend of Silver Surfer. So yeah, we have that great old Power Cosmic speech, which is great. And this is when we jump into the pod arrives for backup. So the pod of people, as they're going through and they're trying, it's getting very close because a bunch of soldiers, the gatekeeper soldiers, are there to prevent Dawn from saving the Never Queen with the monkey heart, if you will, the little toy monkey. And that's when the pod of her fellow prisoners jump in and help her. And this is when she's given a chance here from the Never Queen. Dawn considers all of her possibilities before dropping the heart into the Never Queen. And she's seeing all of these constant disagreements that she has with her sister Eve throughout the years, being children, going into adulthood, and just the, once again, just all those differences. See, she's reflecting on that now.
Yeah, we get that really good color work again with, so you can tell the two sisters apart from one another.
Yeah, Laura all red. You know, we got the Eve representing yellow and more so red with polka dots. Basically have our bumblebee and our ladybugs. So yeah, as she's going through, she has one final talk there where she's kind of sitting there by the fences. She watches her sister Eve leaving and going out for her adventures. And Eve tells her, you know, all you have to do is just go on the other side of the gate. And when you close it, you're going to be able to go out on your travels. That's all that's holding you back. And the monkey toy now transports into transfuses, maybe whatever word, into a fence. And she's now holding that fence as she's like making that decision on whether she's going to, you know, before dropping that heart into the Never Queen. We see Zed's sword and his armor is from a beyond the universe, and he's able to shield himself from the power cosmic. So this is the one-up that he has over the Silver Surfer. Not many people do, but that's what, you know, with this battle axe and with that armor, that's kind of how Zed is able to, you know, get the upper hand on him. Or the upper mouth, because he has extra mouths and upper eyes on
him,
too.
He's got quite a bit of... Yeah, he's got a situation.
Yeah. So at first you'd like to trust the guy, you know, you don't know his backstory, but now that we know he's a bad dude, just being like, yeah, I don't trust anybody with two mouths and three eyes anymore, because it reminds me of Zed. The Surfer, he realizes there's one move. This is where the comic gets very silly. There's one move that even though he can't use the power cosmic, he decides to poink him by going, nyuk, nyuk.
Yeah.
As in using a pop culture reference that he learned by being exiled on Earth for so long, he takes a move right out of the Three Stooges. And he's able to basically distract him enough, because here he goes. He's like, well,
poke some in the eye.
Yeah. Well, if my power cosmic can't stop you, then something simple is going to, and pulled the Three Stooges move right on him.
Yow.
Yeah, so he's able to grab for the sword and everything, and basically stabs him. He sends him to the place beyond reality. And this is when we see Eternity now. We saw him in the little flashback with the little romance with the Never Queen. And this is when Eternity is casting him out because of what Zed did to the Never Queen, did to his girlfriend, basically. And he just kind of is put out into this, like, middle existence here. And we see that cloak guy again, who just kind of, like, lets him leave there. Just going to just let him be as is. And, you know, we don't learn much about that cloak guy. And I'm trying to remember if we see him later on in the series. But yeah, we're kind of getting to the joyous ending here as the Never Queen, her heart has been restored. She is healed. And she reminds Dawn that Dawn chose her own future. And it's up to her now to, you know, for her life to choose what she wants to do. And this is when we cut to the end of the issue. where we're getting to that very famous moment. Surfer wants to return Dawn back to Earth. And this is when he calls for his board again, you know. Toomey, she says. He's questioning. Toomey, is that one of the other escapees? Did they leave him behind? She goes, no, I was talking about your board. He goes, you named my board Toomey? He goes, no, you did. You said Toomey, my board. And they kind of look at each other for a panel. This is what it's great for, the digital version here.
Yeah. It's just that's so good.
Just cut there. Yeah, because you just have that moment. You don't know what's going to happen.
Yeah.
And then all of a sudden you cut to it. And the Silver Surfer, this might be the first time he's laughed since he's been to Earth. Yeah. A simple.
Very mechanical.
Yeah. And she's like, what? He goes, come on, Earth Girl. Let's get you home. And, yeah, so that's when we are now officially, Toomey is always going to be the name of the board.
Yeah.
Toomey, if you will. And now I'm sure to you as well. Then we end on the Eternity and the Never Queen. We wonder what will happen. They wonder what's going to happen now to Silver Surfer and Dawn because their future is ahead of them and any possibility is happening because Eternity and Never Queen are basically boinking again. So.
Boinking.
Yes. So, that is the end of that. But also, instead of to be concluded, it says the beginning.
Yes.
So that was an amazing three-issue arc to open up of the Silver Surfer here to introduce the brand new character of Dawn Greenwood. We're getting the Never Queen. We're getting a whole new path for the Silver Surfer here as he's soon, we're going to realize, start to really break out of his silver shell.
Yes.
Not only literally, but mentally as well. And that's what I liked about this. Like, something with, like, this Never Queen and the Empyrean. One thing I like in old comics is that it seems like you can get so much story in, like, a one-issue arc or a two-issue arc, and then you jump in. We're very much in a model, no matter what company that it is, very much in the model of getting six-issue arcs a lot of times, you know, for the trade paperback purposes. And, yeah, you get this good story, and it's great when you sit down and read. But there's some things, like, I get very excited when we get one-shot issues in the middle of the series in between arcs. Because it's fun just to get... This is a great example of a current comic doing something in a shortened fashion where it could have very easily been 6 to 12 issues of this whole thing, but we got so much stuff crammed in 3 issues, and it was amazing, amazing work. So,
yeah, it's a lot of fun.
Absolutely loved issue 3. Issue 4 of the Silver Surfer New Dawn arc. We have started off in the middle of a fight. It's not how you would think a Silver Surfer, based off of what we just read here, how it would start. We are in the Amity Rest Home of Jersey City, and we see Doctor Strange and the Hulk fighting a bunch of monsters, old-timey monsters, as they say. And I think that's the legal way of saying that they're universal monsters, because we see our, like... Frankenstein's monster, we see some Dracula, we see the werewolf and things like that, so the mummy, so that's what, they're just in the middle of a battle here, and that's kind of fun. But then we jump back to space where we belong here. We see the Surfer and Dawn run into the Guardians of the Galaxy while the Surfer is attempting to return Dawn back home to Earth. And when I saw that ship, I knew, you know, of course he knew just by looking at the cover, but when I saw the ship there, you know, that's like the Guardian ship that they always fly in there, and like Rocket's Warbird or something. But yeah, you see the Guardians kind of stop them and kind of question what It's basically what Silver Surfer is doing out there. They are compared to Customs and Immigration.
Okay.
That's what the Guardians are compared to, just being like, what is this here? You guys got to stop us. They're like, well, we're guarding the galaxy. We guard Earth from what's out there in the space, but we also guard space from what's on Earth, mm-hmm. and vice versa. And this is at the moment when Captain Marvel, Carol Danvers, was on the team. She had a very short run on the team. But this is honoring that continuity there. Honoring that continuity there by showing that, this is the time that it takes place in. And Silver Surfer's talking about how he wants to return Dawn home. And this is the Guardians are basically secretly scanning Silver Surfer up here to just see what all of his, they say just to make sure some like cosmic, like, you know, if you, let's just say cosmic mumbo jumbo is not like on him, that when he goes to Earth, he's going to infect, bring like a disease from space or something, and some, space disease,
Spaceys.
I was trying, Kevin Spacey.
Yeah.
We see that they're doing that, but they were secretly, that's what they were secretly doing. They were scanning him just to go through, but they were secretly just seeing if he was going to do any danger. So they didn't tell him that's what the actual scanner was doing. That's what's happening there. Because they want to find out that in case there was any Galactus power that's, like, any of his entity that's, like, there, basically to see if Silver Surfer is working for Galactus again. We do not want to bring that threat to Earth. So that's all part of that, but they see he's clean and basically kind of let him go. So Silver Surfer talks about how he knows Earth's pop culture, because as they're going, he brings them to Earth, brings her to Earth, and he thinks, like, his job's done. She's like, well, yeah, but, I also don't live in Australia. Okay. And she does this little reference here where she taps her, clicks her heels, and she goes, there's no place like home. He kind of looks back at her, and she's like, oh, sorry, that's from an Earth movie, The Wizard of Oz. He's like, stop. I know The Wizard of Oz. I've seen it thousands of times. And he talks about how he was stranded there for like 10 years, that he had learned. He knows everything about everything, every blade of grass that's there, I think he says. Yeah, every blade of grass, every song. He knows everything he knows about Earth. Yeah. He consumed it all in those 10 years. We've been living on this Earth for 33 years, and I don't think we know every song and every...
Pretty close, though, I'd say.
I know every blade of grass, I'll say that.
Yeah.
I'm a real...
Obviously. Who doesn't, though?
Yeah. It's just kind of a funny little stuff there to throw in some humor with that very stone-faced humor.
It's cute how they show her feet tapping.
Yeah, I did kind of like that. So that was pretty cool. So, we cut to Anchor Bay, and as they go into Anchor Bay, we see, as they show up, we see this boater who's just kind of dozing off as he's fishing. He had cast his reel, if you will. And we see the surfer. We see the surfer physically surfing now. Normally he surfs the surfboard in the air, but now he's surfing on the water. And the guy just kind of gets a little splash, kind of wakes him up. But as they go by, we see this like bunch of tentacles, giant tentacles, swallow his boat just out of nowhere. And while this is happening, the surfer senses that something's going on, but he doesn't know what. He kind of turns around and he just sees a little bloop in the water there as the boat went away. But yeah, he's still kind of confused, and it is kind of funny that he didn't like know exactly.
Yeah,
and he just kind of keeps walking, and that just kind of brought some comedy, even though someone just possibly died.
Yeah, I know. Don't you hate it when that happens? Yeah. Though tentacles pop out of nowhere and then swallow you.
Yeah, but it was a very funny scene the way it was presented. So she goes back and she knocks on the door, and she's greeted by her sister, but. That's not who Silver Surfer sees. This is a very funny moment because he immediately thinks that Eve, the twin sister of Dawn, is a Skrull. Because he's like, while we were gone, someone took your body and is posing as you, Dawn Greenwood, and it's got to be a Skrull. And just like, whoa, hold on. This is my twin sister. And she even says, like, you guys got twins, right? And he's like, yeah, we've got twins, but I guess I've seen more Skrulls than twins.
Sure.
And when you're a Marvel comic reader, that's probably more of a common threat is the Skrulls than you see twins. So yeah, it's kind of funny there. And Eve had come back to come back home because Dawn was missing, and their dad, Mr. Greenwood, had talked about how she was missing and everything, and you know she wanted to help support her father and you know hopefully find.
I love the artwork in this.
Yeah,
because they're having they're hugging, they're having their little sister conversation and catching up with one another, and you just see the surfer just like mindlessly looking at them, not really taking it. Like it's the human aspect that is kind of above his head right now.
Yeah.
And he's just like he's just kind of zoned out looking at them like, what the fuck is going on right now?
And it's great you pointed that out because Silver Surfer is referred to as a bowling trophy. Like, oh, you came back. See, now how Dawn was so easygoing about being in space, the dad and the sister are too. Like,
yeah.
I guess if you live in a Marvel universe, you're expected to know this, but still you would think you'd be a little shocked. But, yeah, he makes a comment, so you're back and you brought a statue with you. So I think she calls him a bowling trophy. And then, Eve first sees him, but then, yeah, the dad refers to him as statue.
He says something funny too, though, doesn't he?
Right after he goes, oil can.
Oh, that's
he
right.
He kind of has a little smirk there and he makes a reference to Wizard of Oz. And it's kind of funny right in there. It's pretty great. And, you know, they shake hands and everyone meets. And everyone's all family pretty quick. You can see that the Greenwoods are pretty a welcoming bunch. And I would definitely love to stay at the Greenwood Inn. Because if they're like this just together, imagine what they are running a comfy bed and breakfast. So now we see Surfer sitting there with the family and as well as guests. All the guests are kind of going around. They're all talking about the space adventures. But you have this very curious kid who is just like, so, you from another planet? Yes. Are you made of metal?
This is metal sheath formed by the power cause.
Are you naked?
No, I just told you. This is a metal sheath.
How do you pee? And it's just funny. You just see this little kid just going up there and just like, just kind of questioning him and...
How does he pee? I would like to know that. I'm with that kid.
We'll find out how someone else might pee later on. That's a little foreshadowing to some funny stuff there. So yeah, sitting there, and while this is happening, not only did that boater get swallowed whole into the ocean there, but as Silver Surfer goes off and they go in to get some lunch, we see he's like on the set of Pee-wee's Playhouse basically, and we see like the couch and like the ottoman have mouths, and it's just this, and like there's cracks going on in the background, but like no one's reacting to it.
Yeah.
So it's a bunch of trippy things going on, just being like, all right, what the hell's going on here? Bizarre things. And we cut to them eating, and he says how he eats. He just basically absorbs everything, and she's pretty offended by that because. Her dad is making the signature seafood bisque, and it just makes it remind.
Never in a million years would I want to try that. Oh!
Whenever I see the word bisque, I go to the Family Guy line.
Yep. What is this diarrhea soup?
Tomato bisque. What is this? Blah blah blah.
Yeah.
It's tomato bisque. And so whatever. Yeah.
What is it? Diarrhea soup.
So good, but yeah. Anyway, so bisque doesn't sound good to begin with, but then seafood bisque just makes it like, I'm not a seafood person, and I'm just like throwing that with bisque.
I will do a Friday fish fry. That's as far as I go with seafood. Yeah.
I'm good with that, but anything like that.
It's deep fried.
She's kind of flipping out because like this is a famous thing. Silver Dawn at this moment, she's kind of like yelling at him just and really taking control, like being like, well, you can enjoy food by silvering down and eat like the rest of us. And she comments on his eyes and stuff like that, and getting ready, and he's serving some of the bisque here. But as this is happening, that little boy is now in his underwear as he is surfing through the lunchroom, and he's on Toomey, the board, and it's just kind of funny how, you know, the whoever that is just like, Jeremy, get down from there before you break your neck and put your pants on.
I would surf on that board in a heartbeat, though. Oh, totally. I don't even know how to surf. I would jump on that thing.
Totally. So, we can't blame him. Anyways, as it's going on, as he's distracted and he's just, like, looking at that, telling that the board, to behave as well, we see a hand come up out of the
bisque.
I was going to say tomato bisque.
Yeah.
Out of the seafood bisque, but he goes back to it and, you know, whatever. As he starts doing it, he starts enjoying food and he's starting to feel the what happens after you eat a lot of food, and he's starting to get tired. Silver Surfer getting tired? That doesn't sound right. He's starting to feel human. And basically he takes a nap. Dawn tells him to go take a nap, and Dawn and Eve kind of just share a moment there, and they go back to work, basically. I wash some dishes and stuff like that at the end. And we cut to Doctor Strange and the Hulk. The Hulk goes into Banner form, and Doctor Strange goes into just like a trench coat form there. And they find out that they need to go to the Greenwood Inn. And so you see why these stories are connected now.
Yep.
For some reason, Strange and Hulk, who started off this issue, need to go to the inn. And we cut to the Surfer getting nudged by the board here. And he decides that it's time to go home. And he's like, yep, you're right. I got a silver up again. Get out of here.
So he can do that no problem, right?
No, because as he does it, he hits that barrier that he's very much familiar with back when Galactus exiled him to Earth. And he gets knocked off the board. And he is now knocking on that barrier, screaming no, wondering, is the barrier's back up? How come I cannot get back to Earth? Something has happened. And he's got someone to blame in the last issue that we're going to talk about in this arc. So that was issue number 4.
Is it because of Rocket Raccoon drinking a Dr. Pepper?
No, but when that happened, I thought that Dr. Pepper was going to get the characters on the cans. And this is right before the movie.
This is an ad, by the way. That's why I'm saying this.
We're talking about the ad that's in the book that you won't see in your trade paperback if you're following along that way. And some trippy stuff going on with Surfer in the TV right now, too.
Oh, what the fuck?
Yeah. But anyways, it's crazy.
It's going to be worth a watch.
With that Dr. Pepper ad, I was trying to I was looking on eBay, seeing if it was a certain part of the nation that was getting it, but it was weird that they did that. It was right before the movie, but they were not on the cans anywhere. I was hoping they would be, but maybe this time around, now the Guardians is a huge...
I heard they're a big deal.
Yeah,
big deal, those Guardians.
The new movie has Silver Surfer's ex-girlfriend, Mantis.
Well, there we go.
That was issue 4. Issue number 5 of the Silver Surfer New Dawn, as we see Silver Surfer return back to Earth, going to the Greenwood Inn, and right away he goes, to me, Dawn Greenwood, now. She goes, Norrin, what's the matter? Are you all... Wait, did you just say, to me, Dawn Greenwood? I would have words with you. You do? You totally to-me'd me. Do you have any idea how rude that... Enough! Interrupts.
Yeah.
Dawn's been to-me'd. And that was kind of funny. She doesn't stand for it. We're talking all this series that how she's a big hero.
Yeah.
She's not the damsel in distress. And even something like this, Silver Surfer just returned and she closed the window on him, just being like, screw you. Because he's talking about how she's the reason that he cannot return.
It's funny, you got this big, powerful galactic guy and this woman, this blue haired girl that has no power at all, is just like, no.
Yeah.
Like, just not.
Yeah, he questions. He's like, what do you do to me? And he's like, I can't leave Earth. You've definitely done something.
Yeah.
So, yeah, that's how it starts off. Then we see the pickup truck as Doctor Strange and Bruce Banner had gotten, hitchhiking. They're hitchhiking to the Greenwood Inn and they're just hanging back there and they show up there. So they arrive at the inn and Strange asks if the Surfer had seen anything unusual, if he's experienced anything odd. Right away he connects with them because they were the Defenders together. The Hulk, Doctor Strange, Norrin, the Silver Surfer, and I'm trying to think who the other... I can't remember at the top of my head here who the original Defenders were.
Oh, jeez.
But we're about to see the Defenders in live action in this coming year. But none of those members were the original members here. We're looking at them right now. So that's how they quickly connect there, because they all used to be a team together. And Strange tells Surfer about the special time of the Universal Lunar Alignment, where the Lord of Nightmares can rest on Earth. And we see the Lord of Nightmares character, and he basically looks like a Johnny Depp kind of character, where Johnny Depp would play him if this was a live-action thing. So yeah, with the Lord of Nightmares, he continues to sleep, and Earth will suffer from the dark dreams forever. This issue gets very heavy. Now, as we go through this here, I'm glad I have the notes on it, because it just, I really just read every single word and just really deciphered as best as I could here. They're wondering what's going on, though, is how, like, everyone's asleep. They're like, well, you guys aren't asleep. Well, Doctor Strange is in his astral form. And so that's why. So Doctor Strange is sleeping somewhere else, but his astral form is what we're seeing here. And Bruce makes a very deep comment of saying how Bruce Banner lives inside me, the real Bruce Banner, and he's sleeping. So, like, just because, like, you know, the Hulk and Bruce, and they all kind of live in each other, so it's some real deep meaning. But they go into the inn, and Mr. Greenwood is there to greet them. And Strange uses his amulet of Agamotto to cast illusions on this whole place, because they're wondering, like, well, why is Mr. Greenwood not sleeping? And, you know, you're talking about everyone's in a nightmare dream sequence. Well, yeah, so Doctor Strange was making everyone seem that it was normal, but we see the real world, that everyone's basically a walking zombie. Oh. Everyone is sleepwalking, basically. And that's what, you know, they've been trying to stop this Lord of the Nightmares, and in order to do that, they wanted everyone to at least appear to be normal.
Yeah.
So the guy that was driving the truck was probably sleeping while driving and stuff, too. So yeah, that's what's going on, is everyone is sleepwalking. And because the Silver Surfer arrived with Dawn, and the Surfer fell asleep, because he had that seafood bisque.
Oh. I don't.
Yeah, I just want to throw up. I just want to plorp like that one guy. Plorp.
Yeah.
And arrive with Dawn. Surfer fell asleep. Only Dawn can stop this, because she's the last waking person on Earth. So now that the Silver Surfer had fell asleep, when normally he doesn't sleep.
Yeah.
But because he fell asleep, that means there was only one other person, and that was Dawn. Because Dawn, they weren't there when the Lord of Nightmares was doing, like, the spell on everyone.
Yeah.
So when they came from the universe, then that's what made them special. So, yeah, that's what's happening there. And the Hulk, they go in to Dawn to prevent her from falling asleep, because she had gone to bed when she closed the window on Norrin and stuff. And she's half asleep. She's kind of just wondering. You see the little toy monkey on the desk there now. One issue back. See the toy monkey that she had there, that she thought of when it was the heart and everything. But yeah, anyways, the Hulk goes in. They try to wake her up and try to keep her awake. And they realize, since she's half asleep, there's still time for it. But as the Hulk tries to wake her up, Surfer's pretty defensive. Because, you know, who knows what the Hulk's going to do if he tries to wake up a human girl that maybe he's not going to go the way he had planned. So then the Surfer whips the Hulk out of the way, because he goes, she's my responsibility. I must do this. And goes to try to wake her up himself. Let's see here. Then Dawn thinks the Surfer will destroy the Earth like the Empyrean. So that's kind of where Dawn's kind of feeling right now, with seeing that, you know, everything shattering around her, and just being like, oh no, you know, you just, you know, what had happened is everyone escaped from the Empyrean, but she thinks that Earth is basically now in trouble because of all this stuff that's going on here. Doctor Strange had gifted her now with the Eye of Agamotto, and we see it in a very goofy, crazy, freaky, trippy way. The eye gets implanted in her forehead, and she's like, okay, this is really gross. She's the only one that can stop this Lord of the Nightmares guy. So Eve is now living her nightmare, a life, Eve the daughter. Eve is living a nightmare now, which is, her nightmare is turning out like her sister, who very much is a homebody, stays in her hometown, likes working at the inn, doesn't want to get out. And we see her just going through this, going through the motions, and she's folding up the sheets and changing the bed sheets at the inn. And she just keeps talking about how she can never leave. And she actually, by the end of this transformation, she, I think it's on the next page, by the end of this transformation, her sister Eve eventually turns into Dawn. Because that is Eve's nightmare. Everyone is living their nightmare because of the Lord of the Nightmares has cast this curse over Earth. Strange, Doctor Strange and the Hulk are now fighting the Nightmare Realm. So they're just fighting all these Doctor Strange-type creatures, what he's normally up to his normal hijinks, if you will. Then we cut to Mr. Greenwood's nightmare. After all that fighting is going on, we cut to him. He's outside, and he is, let me just see here as I'm jumping. It's while the fight's going on.
Mm-hmm.
Mr. Greenwood realizes his nightmare is the fact that his family is getting washed away. We see them built out of sand. He's got his business that is in sand, and the fact that their wife had left, we later find out in the series what had happened to her. Eve wants to travel, and she goes away, and he knows that eventually that Dawn is eventually going to wash away too. And that's what his nightmare is that his family eventually is leaving him, going off while he's stuck there with the business and everything. We see the surfer, he's urging Dawn to make a wish upon a shooting star. So we see that quick, and she's like, that's not a star, that's a spaceship. So that wasn't exactly a star, but it's a starship consisting of Plorp. We see Plorp again, the green Plorpy guy, and all the other people. We see all the other people that she was imprisoned with, and she's seeing them, and she refers to this as her dream. And because I'm understanding this is the fact that they're all like her dream is to be out in space now that she experienced it, even though she's the homebody, doesn't like traveling around Earth, but maybe space is where she should go. So it's not her nightmare. It's in fact her dream. So let's see here. Then we cut to the surfer is starting to freak out. He's talking about how he shouldn't have silvered down. Dawn is the only hope. You know, the fact that he silvered down, he lost the edge. He lost the possibility of stopping the Lord of the Nightmares. And now it's up to Dawn to do it because she's the only one awake. And this is when he shines a light on him and basically to figure out like where he is. And they find out that he's in room 8. But she's like, well, there is no room 8. She's like, there's only 7 rooms in the inn. He goes, well, actually, this is when Surfer notices, wait, that's not an 8. It's a sideways 8, which is the symbol of eternity.
Ooh.
And that's when he like finds out like where to locate. And they find out that's where the Lord of Nightmares is sleeping. Or not eternity, infinity, I'm sorry. We got done talking about 3 issues of eternity.
Huh.
It's the symbol of infinity. And they're all in Nightmares dreams. So the Lord of the Nightmare is dreaming himself, and the Earth is existing within her. You can see how pretty trippy this is.
Yeah, I would say so.
Dawn is now going to try to wake him up, and she does it in the only fashion she knows, because he goes, it's up to you now. Wake him before morning, or we remain in his dreams forever. Thanks, Norn. No pressure.
Yeah.
She goes up, she goes, rise and shine! Up, 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 up! And she's shaking him, and then she goes, okay, Disney princess time, mwah, and kisses him on the lips, still doesn't do it. So she tries all the normal tropes of waking somebody up. That is kind of funny here, but they need to do something else. And this is when Silver Surfer realizes he may have found out through everyone else's nightmares that he may realize how to wake him up. He realizes that he needs... that right now that they're living, that even though it's nighttime in New Hampshire or Massachusetts, he goes, it's still dawn somewhere else.
Sure.
So he calls Toomey, his board. Toomey goes out there. He's able to reflect the sun, which is somewhere else in the world right now. The sun reflects off of the board into the eyes of the Lord of Nightmares. And just like that, he wakes up. And you're thinking, like, well, here's the big villain that just did all this shit to Earth.
Yeah.
But now you cut to the scene, and they're all, like, just talking. It just seems like a Full House type of ending. Yeah. You know, everyone's all cheery and stuff like that. And, well, he talks about how he's glad that he woke up, because if all this bad stuff was happening, which is good stuff to him, he would hate to be sleeping during it. So he's actually kind of glad that they woke him up, and because, yeah, he would hate to be sleeping during the entire time. And then we get another little moment while that's happening. The kid in the corner here.
Yep.
We see that kid again. He's talking with the Hulk. And the Hulk, I should say, is drawn. Like, he looks goofy and he looks different than what we would expect him to. But this is very much on point with how he originally looked in the origin of the Hulk comics.
If you want to read what the kid says.
Okay, so I'll be Hulk. Yeah.
I'll be
kid, yeah, because I did the kid voice. So you're green all over?
Yes.
You're really strong?
Strongest one there is.
How do you pee?
From a mile away.
Dan Slott is having too much fucking fun.
I know.
Writing, being able
to. Yeah, that's all right. We're having fun reading it, so.
And he gets a lot of comedy in the Spidey book, so you would think him doing the Silver Surfer, it's all going to be serious, but.
You know what? That's funny, and it changes the tone of the book, obviously.
Yeah.
But that is a conversation a kid would ask those questions. Well, it's not like it's not realistic in a superhero world.
Oh, yeah, he's totally realistic with that there. So, yeah, after that, the kid being curious again, Silver Surfer is talking about how all this stuff had happened. He goes, well, Doctor Strange, he's the, you know, the Sorcerer Supreme and all that stuff. And he's questioning why she doesn't seem too disturbed by that. He's like, well, he did it with magic. And he's like, and you're okay with that? She goes, why not? That's magic. Makes perfect sense.
Huh.
So you get some more of that comedy in there. Doctor Strange and Dr. Banner / the Hulk take off. And we end here with the dad, with Eve going up to Dawn, because Silver Surfer's like, well, now I can leave, everything's good. But this is when Eve is like, pulls Dawn aside, says, no, you're meant to be out there. You're not leaving without Dawn. My sister needs to go with you. Like, I was getting that this is what she needs to do, and she's starting to realize that too. She's very accepting of it, and even the dad is very accepting of it, just being like, you know, don't be a stranger. You know, you can always fly back home, but I have to let you live your dream. And this is when they're just kind of talking here, and Silver Surfer agrees too. He goes, why not? But then he says, but you must understand, we shall not return this way for some time. Okay, she says. They go through and they talk about, she refers to him as her champion.
Yep.
And this is when he says something very important. It just goes back to when you brought that up about her being, you know, saving all the people and not being a
hero. Yeah.
He just goes, from all I've seen, Dawn Greenwood, you do a fine job of championing yourself. Ready? You bet. Where to now? And he goes, anywhere, everywhere. Hang on. And they kind of go off into the sunset there. Dad kind of realizes they can't see him anymore, but Eve, the remaining twin sister daughter, basically says, don't worry, at night when we look at the stars, we can see her again.
Yep.
And the end. So in these 5 issues of Silver Surfer by Mike Allred, Laura Allred, Dan Slott, The Storytellers, New Dawn, Volume 7, whatever you want to call it, from 2014, issues 1 through 5, we've got 2 great arcs, meeting a character, a lot of space, a lot of Earth, and now it looks like we're going back up to space, and Dawn Greenwood is going to be a companion to the Silver Surfer, which, I'm not a big Doctor Who fan, I've seen a little bit, I've seen some Karen Gillan stuff, some your Amy Pond stories, Dan Slott, if you know him, like I do, he's a huge fan of Doctor Who. Doctor Who nut since the beginning. Mm-hmm. He geeks out when he's at cons for his own purposes of his own books and appearances, that he gets all these pictures with these Doctor Who people. He's meeting all of his favorite people from his favorite show. And he has now created a very Doctor Who-esque comic book in which you have the Doctor, a.k.a. Silver Surfer, and the companion, a.k.a. Dawn Greenwood. And He has done that very seamless way of making it plausible for the Silver Surfer without just being like, I want to do something Doctor Who-ish with existing Marvel characters and still create my own thing. And that's Dan Slott and Mike Allred, Silver Surfer. Now that we did those five issues, we're pretty much at a normal time here as we wrap up here. We do closing thoughts. I've got a pretty long closing thought, and I've been talking as this was my pick of the month, so I am going to lend this over to you to talk about closing thoughts on what we just read.
Well, anything that... I think I have the most fun with things that can make me laugh that are a little bit... like I said earlier, how the Silver Surfer was always a really serious character, and he spoke very properly. The fact that you have... you have Dan Slott writing him completely different and having that kind of opposites attract situation in the book, I think works really well. Because it's a fucking entertaining five issues.
Yeah, it's a pretty good dynamic there. And when all the previous six volumes of him are very serious and not too many humorous moments in there, you'll still get a little bit of him.
I'm curious what other people thought about this. If this is a run that's looked down upon... Because he, quote-unquote, ruined the character. I wonder.
I think there's enough people that, you know, that grew up with it that are just like, all right, well, this isn't my Silver Surfer. Yeah. And to them, I say, well, you got 50 years to keep reading your previous Silver Surfer. This just branches him off, gives him some new light, and definitely introducing an awesome character and awesome stories. And there are a ton, there's definitely way more people that are loving it because... This series went up to this volume 7, if you will, pre-Secret Wars. As I go back to my digital collection here, I can get the actual count in just a second. Because, Secret Wars kind of split up the volumes, so they started a volume 8 right away.
Oh, boy, okay.
So there's 15 books in this current series. We just read the first five. And then after Secret Wars, a relaunch with number 1. Issue number 3 of that relaunch was the 50th anniversary issue when that March came up of when Silver Surfer first debuted in the Fantastic Four, number 48, I think it is. I will say this, not by coincidence, just because I've had it for years, but my iPad lock screen and my iPad wallpaper are Silver Surfer, both the current run we just read and a classic image, some awesome art. And for years... Since this happened, this was 2014, so for 2 years, but years, I made it sound like decades. In my background here, on my phone, I have never changed this, and I will never change it. You just see it's kind of like some bunch of colors and stuff.
Sure.
This is the first time we ever see Silver Surfer. This is the Jack Kirby Silver Surfer back from the 1960s, 50 years ago. And that serves as my background image, and I guarantee you 100% I am never changing that. Because it looks cool just with the with all the icons and stuff, and you wouldn't know what it is until you get to the end there and you see Silver Surfer kind of pop out. So, you expressed your love of this, and so now it looks like you've got some...
It was a nice pick.
Yeah. And to tell the story really quick, because these first five issues didn't get me into the Silver Surfer. It was around issue 9 was coming out. It was being advertised. And Dan Slott, instead of advertising issue 9, he kept saying, issue 11 of Silver Surfer is going to be like the biggest comic of Silver Surfer ever, a comic that I've done. There's so much work, and it's a big, supersized issue. It's so special. He kept saying that tweet after tweet after tweet. I currently wasn't reading it. I'd only read that first issue, so I was 8 issues behind. And he kept talking about it. And I was like... Why is he... He's going so nuts. He's not even talking about the ones that are still yet to come out.
Yeah.
He keeps talking about issue 11. And so I'm just like, okay, fine. I'm going to do it. Went through, ordered all those issues. I binge read issues 1 through 10. And I was like, holy shit. Silver Surfer is now retroactively my favorite character.
Nice.
Comics character ever. And that's all because I read them all at once, and I was leading up to that 11th issue. Right before that 11th issue came out, though, something magical happened. I met Dan Slott.
Oh, yes.
So I went to C2E2, and this was 2015. This is just literally the 3 days before the big issue 11 was going to come out. I was in his very long line. I was very excited to meet him. I had a bunch of stuff from Ren and Stimpy comics to Spider-Man to Silver Surfers.
Yeah.
Had all this awesome stuff that I wanted him to sign. First went up to him. I've told this story before. First thing I said to him was, first of all, thank you for Cindy Moon, a.k.a. Silk. I talk about her a lot in the normal For Comic's Sake weekly podcast. But then I talked about Silver Surfer and how this character, and he's favored and replied to me so many times on Twitter. I've gotten some favorites from Mike Allred too, and just constantly sharing my love, just being like, you guys have made Silver Surfer retroactively my favorite character thanks to your run. I've since gone back, adding to my action figure collection, my t-shirts, just everything Silver Surfer. I want to own it all. I want to have, and there's not a lot of it out there when it comes to merchandise and stuff, but all I know is that Silver Surfer is, I'm just all in. I'm loving all the original stuff too. So as I'm talking about this, I told him like I told him just straight up honestly, being like, been a fan of yours for years for Spider-Man, but with Silver Surfer, I'm like, I like that first one, but I'm like, I just didn't have it in the budget to read it. But then I'm like, but then you kept tweeting about issue 11, and he started laughing. I'm like, that's all you tweeted about? And I'm like, fine, I'll give into it. He was getting so excited, and I'm just like, and I read the first 10 just days prior to this. I'm so excited. And he was getting so pumped up that I did not see him do this with anybody else. So it's me and him at his booth. He takes out his phone, which he had a Spider-Man phone cover, of course, because he's just... I always say this, Dan Slott is the biggest super fan of comics that is a writer of comics. He showed me on his phone, and a couple other people kind of leaned in there, were pretty close there, but he showed me, because of me talking about this, on his phone, he went to his images, and I'm looking at Dan Slott's phone now. He's flicking through. He goes, let me show you something cool. This is my storyboard. This is my whiteboard that I keep in my apartment when I write my comics. Yeah. He goes, normally I split the giant whiteboard. What you would see Sheldon's whiteboard on the Big Bang Theory, it's like that. He goes, I would split it down in three portions, and that is one issue of Spider-Man for each portion. So I do three issues of a comic on one whiteboard, and he goes, that's how I plan things out. That's how he scripts it and just whatever. He goes, this whiteboard here, this whole thing?
Yeah.
He goes, this whole thing is just Silver Surfer issue 11. Because of all the twists and turns and the crazy, like, literally twists and turns. When you read that book, he kept telling people, don't read it digitally, you have to read it physically. Just like, oh, okay. Because he's like, seriously, it's going to be a different experience. Because that book, when you read issue 11 of this current run that we just are reading, you have to turn it upside down, you have to flip it around. It's a fucking amazing book.
Yeah.
So he's showing me this. He's geeking out so hard that, like, I want him to zoom in more so I can read what's on that board there. But he's, to me, my board. So he's showing me that, and I'm just, like, flipping out that he geeked out so hard with a fan that he had to show me his phone and, like, inside of his apartment so I could see his storyboards and stuff. It was so awesome. When I read issue 11, I was so excited. It was a big moment, top of the stack. I read it, and I'm like, what the fuck was that? I'm like, I didn't understand a single word of that.
Yeah.
I texted my buddy Sean, X-Men Sean, and I talked about him a couple times from Michigan. He's a huge Doctor Who fan. He's a huge Silver Surfer fan of this run and stuff. We were just going nuts together about it. Issue 11 came up. I was getting nervous. I was like, man, I'm stupid. I texted him and just like, hey, did you read 11? He's like, yeah. I'm like, did you understand it? He's like, no. And I'm just like, oh, thank God. I'm like, I didn't either. And he's just like, yeah. I let it sit for about 4 days, and I reread it, and it all made sense. And I'm like, this is the most genius comic ever. Blah, blah, blah. I can't wait to re-meet him so I can have him sign issue 11. But anyways, that just shows you the speed of my talking here, not only because I'm a huge Gilmore Girls fan and I just geeking out about how fast they talk and stuff too, but I'm only saying that just to get every point in there. How much I love Silver Surfer, how much I appreciate Dan Slott and the work he does, and Mike Allred and Laura Allred and Clayton Cowles. Great combination here on this title.
Whew!
Do you think I covered everything there?
I hope so.
Yeah.
I hope so.
Now you talk, because you have to say something.
Now you want me to talk. Okay, well...
November's over.
Yeah, November is over in officially in a couple days.
It's over right now because this is released on the last day of the month.
Yes.
We are recording this on the last day of the month.
Yes, absolutely. So, but yeah. So December is going to be my pick of the month.
And I don't know what it is.
I'm hiding it. I'm hiding it right now. It's in this bag.
Yeah.
But yeah, no, I was excited to pick this because this is something I've wanted to talk about for a while.
All right.
But you had not read it.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay.
But all now
right.
We can officially geek out.
We're ready. Good.
Yes. We can geek out about it together now, and that's going to be volume one of Saga. So, woo! I'm really excited about this. This, of course, is... this has a personal attachment to me because the first comic book I ever subscribed to, in terms of a like getting a regular weekly monthly comic pull, was Saga. This I've been getting this from issue number one. In fact, I think I have three issues of number one, which are actually worth a couple dollars now.
Yeah.
So, cool. I'm so fucking excited to talk about this. Writer Brian K. Vaughan, artist Fiona Staples. Who does, I mean, this is beyond fabulous
instant
artwork.
Classic.
It is definitely her own style. It's almost like watercoloring, I want to call it. And then we have letters and design by Phonographics. I'm sure that must be a company they might have hired out. So
this is what, first six issues? Because they do 6-issue arcs?
I think so, five or six, yeah.
Is that the, today, issue 40 came out.
And we
all read it, and it was so great.
It was amazing.
but issue 40 is the first issue that I had in a previews when I had caught up in trades, and I started getting the singles to get all caught up.
Yep.
But issue 40 today was the first time I went to a comic book store and was able to get my first issue of Saga on the day.
With a series like this, it's hard to talk about with the history that it has just to start talking about issue 40.
Yeah.
So I thought talking about the first six is going to be a really good place to start. I am really excited to talk about this. So
yeah,
I've read this like three times. So I'm going to read it again. And
would be my third time reading
it.
Okay. Because I read it. I bought the trade years, like when a first trade just came out.
Yeah.
And I'm like, that's cool. I'll get into it eventually.
Yeah.
And then with you being a big fan and you not being able to talk about the individual issues, I used the gift card, scooped the rest up, and I binge read all of them.
Yeah.
And now we're on the same page.
So I am really looking forward to this. I'm just like paging through it right now as we're talking. Just remembering how this starts out. Here, you know what? I'm going to do something a little bit different.
Oh.
I'm going to say, what the first words are in this.
All right.
So we have the main female of this story. You just see her, head, and she's kind of really angry.
Yeah.
And she's sweating. And then you have a voiceover that says, "This is how when an idea becomes real." And you have this woman who just looks ferocious, and she says, "Am I shitting? It feels like I'm shitting." That's all I'm gonna say.
And so, this is one of the best comics ever.
It absolutely
that's
is.
That's how it starts off.
It absolutely is. It's won numerous awards. You and I don't really give a shit about awards, but when they're comic book awards, it gets my attention, at least, to maybe check something
deserved.
Out. Yeah. So, but yeah, that's gonna be our December Baby Got Back issues. It's gonna be Saga. I think it's 1-6. I don't really know.
Yeah,
to tell you the
truth. They do 6-issue arcs.
Do they?
On those bad boys.
So
yeah, that drops on Saturday, December 31st, which is New Year's Eve.
All right.
So why not reread Saga or read it for the first time, 1-6 in Volume 1, and come back on New Year's Eve instead of getting drunk and, you know, just not remembering the night.
You can get drunk and then read this at the same time,
I guess. Yeah, we're going to have a better party, New Year's Eve party of ringing in the New Year by rereading Saga. So yeah, that'll be Baby Got Back issues number 6, dropping on Saturday, December 31st. Ryan's pick there.
Woo.
So yeah, talking about a lot of stuff.
We're getting close to 2 hours here. Holy shit.
So it was good. We covered a lot, and I was glad that I finally got all of that out. I got to talk about my favorite comic character.
Yeah.
And if you want to hear me continue to talk about that character, listen to our individual weekly spoiler-filled episodes filled with comics, because we love comics.
We love them so much.
For one specific reason.
The reasons are
for
comics the sake. For Comics Sake on iTunes.
At For Comics Sake on Twitter.
facebook.com/forcomicsake.
For Comic's Sake on Instagram.
Or email us forcomicsake@yahoo.com.
Music by Bicycle vs. Motor Vehicle. Please visit them online, soundcloud.com/BVSMV, as well as BVSMV.bandcamp.com.